This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. Thank you so much for tuning in today. For all the transformation of Wisconsin's economy in the past 30 years, the state is still known as the epicenter of the dairy industry. The state is a leader in the production of milk and milk products like cheese. But we're also a leader in a different corner of the industry, so-called shelf-stable dairy products, from energy and diet drinks to yogurt and pudding to the cheese sauce you might have on the nachos at your next Packers game. Germantown-based Gales Foods has been a player in the Wisconsin dairy world since the late 19th century. CEO Catherine Gale is the fourth generation from her family to lead the company, but she comes to it from a background outside the dairy and food science world. Her background includes positions at Oracle, with the Chicago Public Schools, and as a special assistant to Chicago Mayor Richard Daley. And President Obama appointed her to the board of the Overseas Private Investment Corporation. Catherine Gale was our guest in a conversation recorded on the sixth floor of the University Club in downtown Milwaukee last week. Welcome to Lake Effect.
Thank you so much, Mitch. I'm really happy to be here.
Let's start with the company you lead, Gale Foods. It is not necessarily a brand name that that everyone might recognize. Can you describe the part of the industry that you reside in?
Right. So our company is a good Wisconsin dairy food company. Our customers are in a couple different categories. One is we sell to the global multinational food companies who have the brand names, and then they contract with companies like ours in many cases to actually produce that product that they have created and that they market and sell. But we do the entire production. You know, we source the ingredients, we make the product, we package it, we label it, and then we ship it, in most cases, directly to their customer. So that's contract manufacturing. Then we also do a lot in the food away from home segment. So we'll sell into the quick serve restaurant channels and also into food service. We do a lot in the concession space. And that actually, in the food away from home, we're behind the scenes in many cases, but we do have a brand name. That we have that brand out there, and we have actually now translated that into our third category, which is retail, and we sell the original, you know, stadium cheese sauce that you can buy for your own Super Bowl party, or let's say when the Red Sox are playing the St. Louis Cardinals coming up.
Let's
both
say that.
Sides can buy that and have the cheese sauce at home.
I gather that way back in the company's early history, this was about being able to provide more consistent dairy products.
Yeah, so I understand that really from probably reading the same thing you read on our company's website, because that is the story of my great-grandfather who founded it, that he wanted to provide more consistent quality butter. And so we were at that time one of hundreds of small Wisconsin dairies. And there's been then just over the next 100 years an enormous amount of consolidation. So really most of those dairies don't exist individually anymore. And our company, even though I'm fourth generation, is essentially a company that was created by my father, who took over in the 1960s and then moved us from being a standard dairy products company into this high-tech manufacturing company that we are today.
Well, and along those lines, how is technology impacting the current state of the industry? What is the cutting edge in the work that you do?
So our food processing is actually enormously high-tech. So people are always very surprised when they come to our company to see the capital investment, the automation, and the technology. So it's not that hard to make a dairy product shelf-stable. But to make a dairy product shelf stable in a way that has you think it's fresh and enjoy that experience is very complicated and difficult to do and expensive to do. That technology all develops in Europe because Europe is the leader in this. I don't know how many people are familiar over in Europe. A lot of times when you get the milk, it comes in a shelf stable carton, those little brick packs. And so you don't buy your milk in the refrigerated case. You just buy it and it sits on your shelf next to the cereal. And that's the kind of processing that we do. The Americans have never decided to buy their milk that way. Europeans do. And Europeans buy many more products that are processed in this way. And so all the technology develops over there. And then we have to adapt it for the U.S. market because we're regulated by the FDA. And we have to be allowed by the FDA to operate here. And that's a different regulatory regime. So it's reasonably complicated to do so.
What is the kind of skill set? I mean, you have, I think, upwards of 300 employees at your facility. What kinds of skill do they bring to the table?
We're looking for, first and foremost, people who want to be part of a growing team. So there are specific skill sets for jobs, but when we're out in the marketplace now hiring, we're looking for an attitude and an approach to work that involves problem solving and moving the company forward. So it's not come in and do this one job. Now, that's in transition. If you ask everybody at our company, I don't think that that's apparent to everybody in their job yet, and that's where we're going.
And you yourself actually come to the industry from outside of this this field. You are the fourth generation leading the family company, but your background is not in dairy or food science.
Right. So my background is, however, in business and problem solving and bringing people together to address problems. So that works pretty well for the CEO of any business, I think. Although, as I've just referred to in the case of my employees, I've had to come in and learn deep into what our industry is and our specific issues in food and food processing. But in many ways, I think that there can be strengths from coming from different industries as long as you are very aware of what you don't know or even more precisely perhaps, Mitch, what you don't know, you don't know. And if you can be careful and thoughtful about that and have a good team around you, then you can make a transition.
We are recording live on the sixth floor of the University Club. Catherine Gale is our guest, and we're talking about your transition into leading the family company, which provides or manufactures shelf-stable dairy products. Has it been rewarding to learn about the stuff that you didn't know or that you didn't know that you didn't know, even as you were growing up in this world?
Absolutely love learning new things. And if the learning curve were too flat, then that would probably be not as personally exciting to me. Although you don't get to choose in your job every day to do just things that are personally exciting to you, so that I would handle that. But I've enjoyed that learning curve. That's not a problem. And it continues. I just move on to a new area. Because as our company is still growing, and we have a very aggressive growth plan for the next 5 years, I expect that learning curve is likely to not change, even though it will be on different aspects of the company.
Is Wisconsin, we hear this debated all the time, is Wisconsin currently a good place for your company to be doing business?
You know, our company is very capital intensive, and therefore we are not a candidate to move the company that we have to another state. So I don't go out and do a comparison shopping between being located here or located somewhere else. I don't find that the government is a large factor in our success right now or in any of the challenges that we're having. They're a role, so they're not invisible to us because we're food and we're highly regulated and everything, but our possibilities are much more generated by things that have nothing to do with the government than do.
So you don't sit there and say, well, if only the tax climate were like this,
no,
or the regulatory climate were like this, we could be doing something
right,
different.
Which isn't to say that we aren't aware of the effect of the taxes on how much we're able to reinvest. That's certainly a concern for any business. And in our case, it's not a gating factor. But we notice what we have left after paying the taxes for reinvestment, and that we all need to be aware of that when we're looking at what's the right policies for our state and for our federal government as well, because you need reinvestment. But really, our opportunities are created by things outside of the government right now, which is great to be in that position.
Well, and maybe this is a good opportunity to shift gears. You have been outspoken in your opposition to the now-ended government shutdown over the debt ceiling and the mm-hmm. Affordable Care Act and your desire to take on the national debt. First of all, what is your view on the temporary nature of the settlement or the settlement as it's temporarily in place?
Well, they needed a temporary settlement because they needed a settlement more than anything. So therefore, I support their doing what they needed to do to avert putting the full faith and credit of the United States government at risk. This is the nth of many temporary fixes and solutions and study committees. So therefore, no, I don't support these temporary solutions in general at all. And I'm hopeful, though, that because this is temporary, we might be able to continue a level of focus, Mitch, on the issue, which might have dissipated if they had allowed themselves more time. Because it did, as distressing as it was, the situation with the shutdown and the question on raising the debt ceiling, it did engage the public in a new way and make more people aware of the issue. So hopefully we're going to remain engaged and be watching, and that will put pressure on them to make some progress during this time.
Well, and you are a member of this national organization, the Campaign to Fix the Debt. It is a bipartisan group. But what do you think has been getting in the way of a truly bipartisan effort in Washington to take this issue on?
That is a long question, a good question. I think what's gotten in the way is that our representatives are responding to the needs of a small number of their constituents rather than responding to the larger question of what is necessary for our country overall. That situation, which happens on both sides of the aisle, with Democrats responding to what the far left wants more than the middle, and Republicans responding to what the far right wants, that has been created through two problems. One is structural and one is cultural. And structural is that we have hyper-partisan districts that allow us to elect people who do not have to respond to an overall constituency, but simply have to respond to primary voters at the far side of whatever party their district has been designed to support. And then the second issue is that culturally, the electorate, the voters, us, we are not very involved, and we don't demand something different from our representatives and from all of our elected officials.
Do you think there's a, and maybe this is an obvious question, a certain short-sightedness in the way we as Americans approach problems, whether it's the debt, whether it's environmental issues like climate change, whether it's healthcare?
Certainly that's human nature. I wouldn't say that Americans are probably worse at that than other people. I think, though, that we can say, yes, that's my nature, to think about what it means to me, to think about my pocketbook, to think about my family, and to think about this year rather than 20 years from now. And then we can say, okay, get that's human nature, and I choose to also use the other parts of my human nature, which is the ability to think longer term and to think about things other than just my pocketbook today. I might also want to think about my pocketbook 20 years from now, and what's good for my pocketbook today may not even be good for my pocketbook 20 years from now. So I think there is a short-sightedness on the part of everyone, and I don't believe that can't be overcome.
You worked, if I'm not mistaken, on behalf of President Obama's campaign in the past, but you actually left the Democratic Party of Wisconsin during the recall campaign. What is your concern about the state of partisan politics today?
So I left the Wisconsin Democratic Party because I felt that it set a bad precedent to use the recall mechanism to protest a policy decision which was Act 10, which was passed into law. And I would oppose those types of uses of the legislative process and of the rights that we have as citizens to recall a governor according to our Constitution. I would oppose that no matter what party was using the mechanisms that way. In the corporate world, sometimes there's a lot of complaint about government regulation. Well, government regulation doesn't just regulate the corporate world. Government regulation, quote unquote, has set up regulations about how government works. You can't regulate an industry to perfect operation, and you cannot regulate the government into perfect operation. It requires people to act in spirit of what the government is supposed to deliver. So technically, we could recall Governor Walker over anything we wanted. And I felt that just because we can doesn't mean we should. An election comes along again every 4 years, you know, for governor. So we can wait, and the Democratic Party in that case and people who are opposed to Act 10 can make their case to an engaged electorate in the regular process. And I think that going back and forth on a policy issue simply invites the, quote, other side to do that the next time when they don't like something that gets passed. And if I could, Mitch, say that we saw the same thing just happen in Washington, D.C., which is we took a policy issue, and it's a big policy issue, there's no question, but it's a policy issue, the Affordable Care Act, passed into law, upheld by the Supreme Court, and a group of people decided to hold hostage. They're not unrelated, because the debt's related to everything, you know, but some unrelated issues over the Affordable Care Act. And that is not going to work. Okay, it's not going to make a functioning democracy, and it doesn't make us safer. It doesn't solve our debt problems. It doesn't improve our education system. It doesn't solve any of the problems that matter to people. And yet, that's what we saw happening.
This is as good a time as any to throw the conversation open to any questions from our studio audience.
You talk about two passions that you have in your life, running the family company and a really aggressive growth strategy over the next 5 years. But it's very clear that you have such a passion for some corrective reform in the political process. If we're sitting here 5 years from now, which accomplishment will you be more proud of?
So the fact is that you have to care the most about things that matter to the most number of people. I am enormously dedicated to the health of our business because of what it means to the community, because of what it means to our employees, because of what it means to my family. Absolutely. And I want to see that succeed. The success of my business, our business, will not determine how well we're doing as a state. We'll contribute to the economy, absolutely, and that matters a great deal, but it's not changing the trajectory of things for future generations. So I think that we should all care about our businesses, but we all exist in the larger context of the democracy. So not just what I would be most proud of, but what I would suggest many of us should be most concerned about is the overall health of our democracy. And therefore, to whatever degree I can be part of a dialogue that contributes to changing the current political climate and therefore the results that we're getting from our government, that would be the most important accomplishment I think that any of us can really be a part of.
Well, and so I think I'm going to ask the question that maybe several people have thought of. Would that extend to running for office someday?
You know, I think that lots of people should really think about running for office because people should think about being in the dialogue of what matters to our country. Therefore, I, like lots of people, should have thought in my life way back, you know, to grade school, where I did run for office, you know, about running for office. And I think everybody should be considering it. And therefore, that's something that I consider because I'm watching what's happening all of the time. And right now, I have a priority and a primary responsibility to my company. And because I've been very consistent today in talking about we get the government we deserve, and our requirement to be engaged as citizens, I don't think it's necessary to run for office to have a big impact and to be fulfilling, you know, our responsibility. And I think that as much as I say everybody should think about it, that doesn't let those of us who don't do it off the hook for the results that we're getting.
I think we have time for one last brief question.
So it's pretty clear you're a person of many passions. You have your business and politics and some books, your daughter. My question is, how do you prioritize and how do you balance that, still find time for yourself to grow? I mean, it's just a lot of things to juggle.
There's a book, of course, because I read books about all these topics, and it's called The Power of Full Engagement. And the point that they make in that book, and that's been made therefore by other people, that the real question is not a time management question. It's an energy management question. That has really come true to me. I've had some health challenges over the past several years that had dramatically reduced my energy. And there was no amount of time management that was going to make up for not actually bringing forth in the morning the energy to, you know, act on these passions that you've mentioned. So I think that we have an individual responsibility to be watching over our energy, because that is something that dictates the maximum contribution that we can make as individuals, to our families, to our businesses. And so we have to be stewards of the energy that we're bringing. And because I've had these health challenges, I've had to do a lot of figuring out of what I need to do to increase my own energy. And that's, it's still a work in progress right now. And when you have a lot of energy, and I notice it because going from having energy to not having energy really made that clear, you can accomplish so much more. So I invite people to consider what they're doing to increase their personal energy, which in most cases is really how they're taking care of their physical bodies and their mental stress. And increases in productivity is at the heart of what keeps an economy growing and therefore creates opportunity. Making a contribution to the world is a big energy enhancer for almost everybody.
Catherine Gale, thanks so much.
Thank you, Mitch.
Catherine Gale is president and CEO of Germantown-based Gale Foods, a manufacturer of shelf-stable dairy products. She's also on the board of directors of the Overseas Private Investment Corporation. Our interview was recorded on the sixth floor of the University Club in downtown Milwaukee last week as part of the club's Enrichment Breakfast Series. You can hear the full conversation at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. We'll take a short break now, and then the doctoral work of a former Green Bay Packer looks at the adjustment of former athletes to regular life. This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.